Alright, you guys, time for another movie retrospective, and we're finally getting around to this movie that I've been wanting to do for a long time. I keep saying that a lot, don't I?
Yeah.
We've only done one other Dario Argento movie, and that was Suspiria. And actually, when we did that one, I had to do that one by myself because Tom was out of town visiting his dad when we did that one.
Yeah.
But I've been wanting to do some other ones, and this one is pretty much was pretty much at the top of the list. This is Deep Red, a.k.a. Profondo Rosso. Also, I've also seen it called The Hatchet Murders or Deep Red Hatchet Murders because, and I'll kind of go into it a little bit later, but the U.S. cut and the European cut are very, very different. Like, the U.S. cut is much, much shorter. And actually, the one that is currently on Shudder as we're recording this is, I believe, the U.S. version, because the longer European cut, the scenes that were taken out, it was like 21 minutes of scenes that were taken out. They never dubbed them into English. So when you watch the European cut, if you watch the one that's dubbed into English, then every now and then there'll be a scene that's in Italian, you know, that just has subtitles, because they never bothered doing those. So that was, I think the Arrow was the company that did like this big special edition, like 2-disc set and all this other kind of stuff that all these really cool lobby cards in it and stuff. And they actually give you the option of watching the European cut just with the Italian scenes like inserted back in there with English subtitles. So I'm going by the U.S. cut because I have not seen the longer one. Like I said, I had it on DVD and I've watched it on Shudder, but I've never had like the longer version. Most of the scenes that were taken out, I think, were mostly just character building type scenes. So a lot of that was taken out. I don't know if a lot of gore was taken out because the U.S. cut's still pretty gory. But so Deep Red was came out in 1975. And is generally considered not only probably one of the best, if not the best, giallo movies ever made. Now, obviously, Dario Argento had made some giallo movies before. His directorial debut, which came out in 1970, The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, was a huge, huge success. And then he did another one in 1971 called The Cat of Nine Tails, and also in 1971 he did a third one that was called Four Flies on Gray Velvet. This is called his animal trilogy.
Those titles are something else. There's a computer program that can emulate the title of a giallo movie.
It's one of my favorite, like, I will entertain myself for hours. That I think you can just Google it. I think it's still there, called just the giallo name and plot generator. It'll generate a plot too, which is cool. But it's just like the names it comes up with are just
Exactly like what the Italians have come up with.
Pretty much, because they'll say, I love giallo movies, and I love the titles of them, like Black Belly of the Tarantula. I mean, like, how fucking rad is that? And they, like, it just had, like, the best fucking posters and all this other kind of stuff, but I just love the fucking titles, and they're so baroque. But yeah, so he actually kind of made his name doing these giallo movies, like I said, that were called his animal trilogy. And then in, you know, after those ones came out, yes, they were very successful and stuff, but then he thought, well, you know, in the early 70s, there was like a huge, you know, rash of giallo movies. They were just everywhere. There was like 100 of them that came out like in just a couple year period. So he thought that people would be getting sick of the genre. So what he decided to do after Four Flies on Grey Velvet was he said, well, I'm going to make a different kind of movie. He made something that was like a comedic Western, which isn't totally crazy because Dario Argento did used to do screenwriting for spaghetti Westerns and stuff like that. So he made a comedy Western type thing called 5 Days in Milan, which was a critical and commercial failure. So, and honestly, I had forgotten all about that fucking movie.
Yeah.
And I have shit tons of books about Dario Argento, so I know, like, about all his movies and stuff like that, but I had totally forgotten that that one existed, and I've never even seen it. So he decided after that, he said, well, I'm going to go back to the giallo genre, and ended up making, as I said, what is considered probably the best giallo ever made in Deep Red.
It's probably good that he went back to giallo, because I'm getting into with Sergio Leone.
Yeah.
You know, with the Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Fistful of Dollars, a few dollars more. And evidently, you know, I'm watching a lot of the documentaries on it in there. Evidently, Sergio Leone was really the only good Italian Western director. The rest of them were, they were just, you know, made extremely cheaply. They were just, they weren't special.
Yeah.
When you look at a Sergio Leone movie, it looks like it has real characters and there's a real story there, because there is.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other Italian ones weren't really like that.
I was reading something interesting about the Italian film industry. They said because, I mean, they have like a rather large film industry, but because they don't have, like in Hollywood, they have like lots and lots and lots of different studios, like working on different types of projects and lots of indie studios and stuff like that. They said, whereas particularly in the 70s in Italy, you would get like one movie would come out and it was like super successful. And then for whatever reason, like everyone would make one. They even had a word for it. I can't remember what the Italian word is, but it was essentially a word meaning like streamlet.
Yeah.
Where you would just like, oh, well, we made a giallo movie and it was like a huge success.
Just keep making that.
And so a ton of them came out. Right. Now, I'm not saying that all of those were bad, because a lot of giallo movies that came out in the late 60s, early 70s, because really I would argue, I mean, Dario obviously didn't do the first ones. Mario Bava is probably credited with doing, The Girl Who Knew Too Much and Blood and Black Lace and stuff like that. But, you know, they just got super popular. But a lot of those were good. I mean, because I really like giallo movies, so I've seen a lot of the kind of the lesser known examples. You know, they made like House with the Laughing Windows, and, you know, there was just a lot of really good ones. But so he decides to go back and make another one. So he made Deep Red. Now, this is an interesting movie in a lot of ways. In some ways, and I've seen some reviewers say that it's essentially a remake of The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, which it isn't really. It does have the same, like a similar plot structure. And actually a lot of giallo movies kind of have this, where, you know, the whole conceit of the movie is that there's someone who is not an investigator. They're usually a foreigner or a tourist or someone like that. And they witness a murder and can't do anything to prevent it. And then they see like a clue, or they keep rerunning the scene, like the murder in their mind, because they're haunted that there's like one clue that they can't contextualize, or they can't get a hold on it that's going to solve the whole thing or say who the killer is. The same thing happened, like I said, in Bird with a Crystal Plumage, where, you know, the guy was like, he sees someone getting murdered in an art gallery and he's like trapped between these two glass windows and he can't help the victim. And then, you know, the whole movie he's trying to remember this little detail. So the same thing happens in Deep Red. Our main character is named Marcus Daly, and he's actually an English pianist. He teaches at a conservatory. He's a jazz musician also. And the interesting thing about Argento choosing to put David Hemmings, who played Mark Daly, into this movie is because he's making a reference to the Michelangelo Antonioni classic Blow Up, which came out in 1966. Because that whole movie was about a guy, played by David Hemmings, who photographed what he didn't know was a murder at the time, but then later on when he developed the photos, he saw that there was a murder and he was like trying to figure out the clues. And that's a very similar kind of thing to this. So he put that guy in this movie 10 years later as an homage to that movie. So he lives in this building. He's coming home one night and he sees a woman who's actually a psychic. Her name is Olga, and she is being murdered in her apartment. Now he rushes up there and tries to help her because she like lives one apartment above him. But by the time he gets to her apartment, she's already dead. It's too late. But for the entire movie, he's thinking, because when he looked up in the window, he thought he saw this painting that was like in this hallway. But then when he went up to the apartment and the cops came and everything like that, he thought that the painting was gone. So he's talking to his friend Carlo, and Carlo was like, well, maybe the killer moved it because it was important, like to, you know, identify them or something like that. So through the whole thing, like through his investigation, he's kind of trying to figure out like what's the significance of this painting, if indeed it was a painting, and all this other kind of stuff. So it was a little detail that he's trying to remember. Now, one thing, and a lot of critics talk about this movie too, in relation to Dario Argento did a lot of stuff in his movies, like playing with gender politics. And interestingly, a lot of his movies, and this is, you have to think, this is like early 70s. A lot of his movies have gay or trans characters, and they are not played for laughs. They're just played like as normal characters, which was actually pretty strange and pretty, like, progressive for the time. But he likes to kind of play around with that. And Deep Red is a really good example of that because it, you know, in a lot of giallo movies, the protagonist is, you know, the person that witnesses the murder or who is a victim or narrowly escapes and is trying to, like, figure out the murder because the police are generally ineffectual or don't care or something like that. That's another very common trope in these types of movies. But, it's usually, they're usually still very sexist. It's usually like a man and he's like bossing the chicks around and the chicks are just all victims and stuff like that. Now, Deep Red inverts that trope because Mark Daly is, you know, he's kind of the driving force of the plot, sort of, because he's investigating the murder. But in a lot of ways, he's really ineffectual. Now, this is something that they do a lot in giallo movies where it's this kind of whole thing about male impotence. Like, they can't, they see a murder and they can't do anything to prevent it. And then, you know, the killer is coming after them and shit like that. But it's really kind of amplified in Deep Red because Mark Daly's character is pretty much subservient to this reporter who starts tagging along with him and investigating herself. And her name is Gianna Brezzi. Now, she's played by Daria Nicolodi, who very famously got into a relationship with Dario Argento later on. They had a very long and very contentious relationship. It was like in all the tabloids over there. I think they were together for 10, 11 years, something like that. And very famously, their daughter is Asia Argento, who later became an actress and a director in her own right. But this is the first movie that they did together. And Daria Nicolodi obviously also co-wrote Suspiria and came up with the idea for Suspiria, which was the one that came out after this. So she is kind of like a go-getting, ball-busting type of girl. And he is kind of like, I'm not going to say he's like a wussy or anything, but it's like she's always, he'll say shit like, you know, oh, everyone knows, like, men are stronger, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, yeah, that she wants to arm wrestle him and she wins. And then he starts saying, oh, you cheated and all this other kind of crap. But it's like, in a lot of ways, she ends up kind of being the hero. I mean, you know, a house catches fire, she pulls him out of it. But then there's, like, all this little stuff, too. Like, she's always, like, busting his balls about how what a wimp he is. She has this car that she always drives. And then, like, the passenger seat is broken, so whenever he gets in there, it, like, makes, he sits, like, way lower than her. So it's, like, always that kind of thing. So there's always this kind of, like, gender politics thing going on in there, which is actually very funny and elevates it a lot. And I think that the reason that a lot of people like Deep Red is because those two characters, like, play off each other so well, which you don't see a lot in giallo movies. I think a lot of the characterization is kind of lacking because it's mostly like a plot driven, you know, mystery story. But this one is kind of fun, like watching these two banter with each other and stuff like that. Also, like I said, they kind of play around with, you know, I don't want to give too much away in case you haven't seen it because, you know, this is the kind of thing where it's like a murder mystery. It's very intricately plotted. And you have to kind of, like, pay attention to all the little details in there and stuff like that to figure out. So I don't want to, like, say who the killer is or, like, spoil it or anything like that. But they kind of lead you down one path to believe it's one person. And then yeah, it's
not, kind of, like, part of the genre of giallo. Yeah. Tends to do that. One of the things that I do like about the Italian film scene from that era is that you could really tell that these movies were being made by basically a small clique of loosely organized people, artists basically making these things. They weren't in like a Hollywood system. They were it was a scene, and it was a lot like the Japanese scene too. The Japanese filmmaking scene was similar. They even kind of like there's a lot of crossover. They worked on movies together. I guess you could say they were industries of similar size and similar budget, too. And I've seen, you know, a lot of documentaries on the Japanese, you know, and the Italians. And it's kind of agreed that even the people who were involved, it was a bunch of shady characters, really, making these.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't really like, you know, honest business. But neither is really Hollywood, but that's in its studio systems, and it was a lot more organized, and there was unions involved. the Japanese and the Italian scenes were kind of fly by night, but they had a good flair. And every now and then you'd get a good director, and because he was free to do whatever he wanted, he could make a really cool flick. And he could make it look the way he wanted to. It didn't have to go through a committee. And, you know, a good example would be, you know, Sergio Leone and Dario Argento. You know, that those movies came out exactly the way they wanted them to. They may have not been super organized. They didn't maybe have huge budgets, but they had their own style.
Yeah, it's very based around, like, auteur filmmaking, where exactly. It's just kind of like one or two people's vision. Imagine rather like, than like a committee.
A really big budget homemade flick is what they're like, with an artistic director. And they're usually like family businesses. And in Japan, it was kind of like almost semi-Yakuza involved, too.
Yeah.
You know? They were artists, but they were also shady money men, you know.
Yeah.
Were behind a lot of this stuff. Making a quick buck, that kind of crap.
I mean, the cool thing about Deep Red is that, one, it was a huge influence. I feel like it's interesting because it bridges the gap between Dario Argento's early giallo films and his later ones, which went in a more supernatural direction. Because Deep Red is pretty much a standard giallo, except it does have, like, the character of Olga, the German woman who is the first victim of the murderer, she does actually have psychic powers. But they kind of take pains to say it's not really magic. She can't tell the future, but she can like, hear other people's thoughts. There's a very famous scene where she's, where her and her two, like, handlers or parapsychologists or whatever, like, in a stage. And she can hear someone's thoughts. The murderer is in the audience, or a murderer is in the audience, and she can hear it, and she starts freaking out, which is why the killer targets her, because she knows who they are, because she can hear their thoughts. So, like I said, the movie that came out after this, obviously, very famously, was Suspiria, which I wouldn't even really call a giallo, because it's not really a murder mystery per se. It's more like a supernatural fairy tale nightmare type of thing.
Suspiria was a pretty flick. I liked how it looked. The lighting, the color, the decor. It looked good.
It is really one of the most beautiful movies ever made.
Even though I must say, you know, I must tell the audience that giallo is not my thing. That's Jenny's thing. That's why she's doing most of the talking right now. It's not really, they're not really my kind of movies. They don't really, give me what I'm looking for, but you know, I'm just one person. You know, Jenny loves it. I do understand her appreciation for it, though. They look really good.
Yeah.
And they do what they're supposed to do. At least the ones that we're talking about, and the ones that you showed me.
Yeah.
You know, it's also known that basically all these giallo movies and all these spaghetti westerns, most of them were crap. But they never left Italy. They stayed in Italy. The ones that ended up leaving Italy and the ones that we saw were the good ones.
Those were the good ones.
Those were the good ones, yeah.
And like I said, I've seen a really lot of good giallo movies. Some of them are better. I don't think any of them are as good as Deep Red. I think it's probably the best one. But I have seen a lot of really, really, really good ones. And actually, Shudder has a bunch of them now. I think they have, they might have Bloodstained Butterfly and a few other ones. But, and I should say, too, that the giallo genre was like a huge, huge influence on American slasher films, and it was particularly a huge influence on John Carpenter.
Yeah.
You can see a lot of giallo elements in Halloween.
Yeah.
Actually, Halloween 2 pretty much, I'm not going to say stole, but I'm going to say homaged one of the deaths in Deep Red, where a woman was like boiled alive, like in a bathtub full of like steaming hot water in her face.
Some of the ones that she showed me, it fits right in there. You start seeing it in movies, you know.
Yeah.
Halloween. What was that one? Dead and Buried?
Yeah.
That was kind of very giallo-like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can see the crossover where it came from.
And I think John Carpenter, too, because I should mention that Deep Red has an awesome, awesome score. This was actually the first time that Dario Argento worked with Goblin, who, of course, would become kind of inextricably linked with his movies later on. But this was the first time that they worked together, and I love this score. Really second only to Suspiria. Like, you know, nothing's going to beat the Suspiria score, because I fucking love those pieces of music. But this one is almost as good. And I think John Carpenter was really influenced by the score of this as well, that particularly those plinky strings and all that kind
of
stuff.
He was influenced by a lot of Italian stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite Carpenter flicks, of course, is Escape from New York.
Yeah.
And that thing is lit
like a giallo movie. It is.
Dario Argento, all the colored lights, the way it's lit, and the way they treated the color. And because they had some new cameras with new film that could shoot at night. I mean, it just looked beautiful.
Yeah.
These night shots with blue and green lights in the background. It just looked really cool, you know. And we saw John Wick 2 last night, and it kind of harkens back to that. That's what...
Yeah, with those really saturated colors.
Yeah.
Like, here's a big stream of, like, pink light, and here's a big string of, like, green light.
We were
light
noticing it last night. It was a green and gold and green and gold and blue over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I think a lot of that does come from... Particularly Suspiria, because that was, like, the most... not outlandish in a bad way, but like the most outlandish example of it, because that was just like this crazy, like, fantasy candy color type of thing. But I should say too that David Cronenberg actually homaged the psychic scene in Deep Red with them all sitting at the table with like all the red in the background for Scanners.
I've noticed that in this era, the 60s and the 70s, the Italians really knew how to shoot color.
Yeah.
And had a light a set. And on the other hand, the Japanese knew how to shoot action. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
There it's kind of like they had two separate, you know, specialties. And in, you know, some in more modern films, like when John Wick 3, they were doing both.
Yeah.
You had kind of like Italian-style lighting with a lot of Japanese-style action.
Yeah, it's almost like kind of a...
It's merged.
Yeah.
Now.
That's kind of an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, American film has kind of, you know, taken the best of both of those two genres and kind of merged them into American film now.
I'm going to say, too, that there's a very famous scene in Deep Red, and if you've seen it, you probably know what I'm talking about, where the one guy, he's about to be victimized by the killer, and all of a sudden he's in his office, and all of a sudden the door busts open, and strangely, this little walking... like ventriloquist dummy looking thing just like walks in there. No reason. It's like, that's not the killer. The killer comes from another place. But I think that in a way that seemed like kind of the inspiration for Saw, like with the little doll coming in on the bike and stuff. Right. It's like, I think they kind of like homaged that scene pretty overtly because the dummy looks kind of similar.
It's weird. You know, you have some of this classic film. It didn't really inspire audiences too much. They don't remember it, but all the directors remembered that. You're seeing it now.
Well, it's just kind of like, you know, back in the old days, like when the Sex Pistols played in Manchester.
Yeah.
And like there was only what, like 100 people there, maybe not even that many, but every single person that was at that gig started a band.
Right.
You know what I mean? There was Joy Division, the Smiths, the Fall. It's like, you know what I mean? So it's almost kind of like if you're a creative person and you create things yourself, obviously shit is going to be more influential to you than it is.
Yeah, it makes an impact on you.
Right. And I think the same thing going back even further in time happened with, you know, like the Velvet Underground, who didn't sell many records while they were around, but everybody that bought that record was inspired by them to form their own bands, and they kind of, you know, became like this bigger thing later on.
I remember being a kid watching these movies when they were a lot fresher and a lot newer. I didn't really notice all these intricacies that we're talking about now.
The kitty's moving the camera.
The audiences didn't know it at the time. Didn't notice it at the time. Although, you know, directors did.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool.
Well, like I said, if you know something about, like I said, if you know something about music, if you know something about filmmaking or art or whatever, you know, obviously you're going to be way more into it because you're going to see, oh, I see what you did there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why... when you see Deep Red, which came out in 1975, you're going to pick up like all this stuff, you know, if you're so inclined or if you're a movie maker, you're going to see, oh, you can see all the threads. Oh, John Carpenter homaged that and David Cronenberg homaged that. And you can see where they're coming from with it because they were the ones that were watching it and studying it, you know, coming from that point of view.
Yeah, and it was a different time back then. You know, they didn't have a lot of computer technology. Everything was kind of handcrafted. You know, it'd be planned out in storyboards, and then you shoot it, and then you did it on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just a few guys working, trying to make something that looked really cool.
Yeah.
Now you do it all like post-production with computers.
Yeah.
You know, which that's cool too. It can be done right, or, you know, sometimes it isn't done right, but from what I've been seeing lately, you know, they're doing it right.
Yeah, I feel like people, like filmmakers nowadays are maybe going back to more old school just because it looks better.
Yeah.
It looks better.
They're paying attention to what looks good.
And I mean, the thing about Deep Red, like I said, that, you know, and why a lot of people call this is Dario Argento's first masterpiece, a lot of it has to do with how he frames his shots, the camera movement, stuff like that. The camera in it is very fluid. He also plays a lot with... And I feel like David Lynch does this too, where he almost kind of like, I want to say he like shows the wires, like he shows the artifice of filmmaking, particularly in the scenes where like when you see the psychics at the table and like, you know, the camera approaches a drape and like the drape pulls aside as though you're just about to watch a play. And there's a scene with Mark Daly and his friend Carlo. They're talking in the street, you know, right before the murder happens. And right behind them is a diner with people posed in it just like the Edward Hopper painting Nighthawks. And this is not, like, commented upon, but what he's doing is he's trying to establish... He's almost, like, making it, like, this is a movie, wink, wink. Because the whole point of the movie is, you know, the... how you can't trust your memory, how you can't, just like the point of Blow Up was, you know, the difference between like photography and real life. This is the same kind of thing, you know, how it, the fallibility of memory and all of that, and, you know, the past coming back to haunt you and all this other kind of stuff. So he always wants to like one remove, like everything's like almost on a stage set, even though it's not, it was actually filmed in Turin. The funny thing, I have a book called Profondo Argento that has like a lot of interviews with him, and he's talking about all of his movies and stuff. And he said that he chose Turin to film Deep Red because at the time it had the highest concentration of Satanists in Italy. Yeah. And he just thought that was neat. So that's why he filmed it there.
Nothing I'd like to mention is just the edit of Italian movies. They're very different. The way a story unfolds in an Italian movie is not like it unfolds in an American story. For instance, and sometimes it's quite modern, like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the edit on that I'm watching now, it's unfolding not like a 60s Western. A 60s Western, an American one, kind of felt like an episode of Bonanza.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm talking about? But the way this one's unfolding, it looks, it's very, very modern. A lot more like Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like that. You know what I mean? More of an action pace.
Yeah.
You know? I like it. It's you know, I think they did contribute to you know, the telling of Western stories. It's funny because they're in Italy,
yeah.
You know, and they're contributing to Westerns. You know, like you see it in The Unforgiven, you know, and you see it in High Plains Drifter. You know, what I mean, that's a lot of spaghetti Western in that.
Well, the cool thing I always thought, particularly about the American-Italian film industries, is that it feeds off each other.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It seems like the Italians were really inspired by Alfred Hitchcock. You know, and then they kind of made all these sort of Hitchcockian type movies. And then, you know, all the giallo movies that they made, which were kind of, like I said, inspired by Hitchcock, also inspired by, you know, British and American crime writers. But then, you know, they made these movies and those movies ended up, you know, contributing to the American slasher genre because all the directors over here were seeing these movies on VHS. You know, all these weird... Because at the time, in the 70s and 80s, Italian movies were way, way gorier than you could get away with in American film. And the thing about this, about Deep Red in particular, it doesn't have a huge amount of death scenes, but the ones they have are pretty nasty. Something that Dario Argento has said, he's like, you know, I wanted all the deaths in this, like all the kill scenes, to be... relatable by the average viewer. He's like, the average viewer can't relate to being shot, for example. However, you can relate to scalding yourself with hot water or having your teeth like hit on the corner of like a desk or something like that. So there's a lot of close-ups. You know, the one guy that dies, you know, and he's just, all his teeth get like banged on like every available like corner. It's really like uncomfortable to watch. And he's like, and I wanted that kind of relatable element to the kills. You know, and Olga gets killed by, first she gets a meat cleaver, but then she gets like hung over, her head gets thrown through and she gets her like sliced up by broken glass and all this other kind of stuff. So they wanted to do something kind of visceral like that. But yeah, so... Yeah, and I was going to say, too, I think I mentioned this a little bit at the beginning, that the Italian cut of this, of Deep Red, actually runs 126 minutes. But the U.S. cut is 21 minutes shorter. So as far as I know, I think all that they took out a lot of character building scenes, like scenes between... you know, Daria Nicolodi's character and David Hemmings' character, where it established more of this kind of banter that they had and like them, like their romance and stuff like that. I think a little bit of the gore was trimmed. I know in the UK version, they actually took out, there is one kind of disturbing scene that I have a hard time watching, but there's this little girl in it and she has taken a lizard and like poked a pin like through its neck and then like stuck it to the ground. So it's like struggling to get out and it can't get out. And as far as I know, that's a real lizard because they didn't have like animal cruelty laws. Like in, which is, if you'll see, if you've seen Cannibal Holocaust, you know how horribly, horribly that can go wrong. But yeah, so as far as I know, that's a real lizard. So the UK kind of cut that out because that's animal cruelty. The US cut still has it, but I don't really like to watch that part because the poor little lizard is just like, you know, you can tell they're struggling.
The Italians were an example of what happens when you just let people run wild. They did.
Yeah.
There were no rules. They let these directors just run fucking wild. What ends up happening is most of the shit that you're going to get is crap. It's crap. They're just knocking it out. They're just trying to make movies. This is dinner at a time when a lot of Italians didn't have televisions. So they all had theaters, and it only cost a few, you know, 30 or 40 cents to go to the theater. And they would go, you know, every day of the week. So there was a constant demand for new movies. And so most of it was just churning out crap. But there were also guys that were real artists, and they would just come out with this weird shit that ended up influencing the world. Had it happened in the United States at that time, the studios would have said, no, we can't have that. The lighting looks funny. We don't want that.
Yeah, you know? It doesn't look real. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we can't have this. So they did allow genius to rise, or certain elements of genius.
Yeah.
And, you know, other directors said, yeah, he got that right. Oh, they got that right. I'm going to take this, I'm going to take that, I'm going to take this. So that's what the Italians gave to the world when it came to film.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
And it should be said that, I mean, Deep Red is pretty much a standard giallo, so it does actually, the plot does actually make sense. This was the film that he made before Suspiria, which a lot of people say doesn't make much sense because he's more worried about, you know, the visuals than he is the actual plot. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I mean, it mostly makes sense. This has, Deep Red has a couple, like, what the fuck moments in it. Like I said, like that doll coming in. But that's, like, so cool and, like, so effective. It's like, who fucking cares if it doesn't make any sense? Yeah. I don't care. But you just, like, have to roll with it just because it's a Dario movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a lot of Italian movies at the time, particularly post-Suspiria. You just kind of have to roll with... That's just how they do, man.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's hard to say, too, because, you know, a lot of times what you're seeing in the United States or the UK with the English dub is not what the Italian audience would have seen. And one thing in particular, like I said, I've never seen the European cut, but I know what scenes they took out. And most of it is because of this wonderful book right here. If you're into Dario Argento, I'm sure you already own this, but if you don't, it's Maitland McDonagh's Broken Mirrors, Broken Minds, where she pretty much talks about, she's, you know, a film historian, and she just talks about pretty much every Dario Argento movie and like analyzes the hell out of it, and it's really, really fascinating. But so she describes a lot of the scenes that weren't in the US dub, and a lot of the dubbing too is kind of problematic because you lose a lot of the subtlety. You know, for example, the character of Carlo in Deep Red, who is outed at some point later on. He's like, and he calls himself a faggot. Yeah. They're like, that's not what the original Italian said. It was much subtler. Like, I have strange sexual preferences. Or he said something like that.
I'm a freakazoid.
That implied something else. I mean, you know what I mean? Whereas in English, he just said, yeah, I'm a faggot and a drunk. And
yeah, there was a lot of the English dubs of those Italian movies. The continuity was bad. And just like you said, the diction. And fucking, you know, the terminology was pretty tacky. Yeah.
And honestly,
and that's not what the original, you know, story was about.
And sometimes, like I said, the translation is bad, so you're not getting all the subtleties of language. I mean, you're always going to lose that when you're translating from one language to another, even in the subtitles. But honestly, I think eventually I like Deep Red so much that I would probably invest in the Arrow, like, 2-disc set, so I could just watch the whole thing in Italian with English subtitles.
Clint Eastwood said making movies with the Italians was kind of difficult because what would happen is that you'd shoot scenes and they would lose the audio.
Okay? Yeah.
And they would also kind of lose the script, or the script drifted, it changed. And then you had to come back.
They're very laissez-faire about making movies.
And then you had to come back months later, okay, and do your voiceover for a scene.
Yeah.
But you forgot what you said in that scene.
Right.
Okay. Oh, the story had been changed, and they no longer had the script. So he said a lot of actors had to take notes of what had happened. Because in certain shots, they're turning away from the camera, and they're still talking, and you forgot what it was that you said.
Yeah.
So some stuff was just kind of ad-libbed after the fact in the voiceover.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
And sometimes the original actor wasn't available to do the voiceover. Or they said, screw it, we never used the original actor for the voiceover, depending on who the director was.
Yeah.
So you had, like, a guy who never shot the movie, never read the script, trying to do the voiceover. For a guy who, that's not him on camera. And he goes,
and he wasn't even there when they were
filming
it.
What's he saying, you know? So that was another thing, you know, you know. That's nothing you have to take into account with these Italian movies.
Right.
They were not professional, and they were not highly organized, most of these directors.
Yeah, although, like I said, I don't think Deep Red really suffers from that. Deep Red does have a pretty straightforward plot. It like I said, it is very intricately plotted. It's a murder mystery. But one thing does lead on to the next thing, you know what I mean? It's like he finds one clue, and that leads him to another clue, and that leads him to another clue. So it does generally make a linear kind of sense, as long as you're paying attention to what people say and, you know, where they're going.
I saw an interview with Clint. Clint said people had warned him. He said, you better take notes, you know what I mean, of what you said, because they're going to come back 4 months from now and tell you to redo that, and you won't know.
And you won't remember what the
fuck happened. And he says that's exactly what happened. He said, you know, in Fistful of Dollars, some of those lines he was saying when he wasn't facing the camera, he didn't know what he said. So they just kind of had to, like, well, I must have said something like this.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, at least he was, like, the original actor. Like, I can't imagine being brought in as, like, a voiceover actor in a movie you weren't even on.
You weren't even on the set.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, just figure it out.
Yeah, and you would think it would be easy. Well, he must have said this. But the thing is that they're doing the voiceover for little 10-second snippets, and they're all doing it out of context. And then later it's assembled.
Yeah,
it's
just, you don't it do was it a, all.
It was crazy.
It's a madhouse. Crazy.
Yeah.
It's a madhouse.
It's a madhouse.
All right. I think we've gone on enough about Deep Red, a.k.a. Profondo Rosso. Go check it out if you like Italian cinema and have not seen it. Like I said, generally regarded as one of the best, if not the best, giallo movies ever made. And I would tend to agree with that assessment. So go check it out. It's on Shudder right now. At least the U.S. version is. And remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Or if you don't like Patreon for whatever reason, you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Remember, our movie retrospectives, just like this one, come out every Friday. And our 13 o'clock matinee, which is 3 new movies in the theater, that comes out every Sunday. And our regular episodes, which are usually paranormal stuff or true crime stuff, come out every Tuesday. So check them all out. We will see you next time. Bye.